Season 2 of Love in Context podcast welcomes you. Get ready for engaging, unscripted conversations with your hosts, Ben and Spencer. Our mission remains unchanged: to explore the Bible through the powerful lens of love.
In this new season, we'll embark on a journey together, unearthing fresh insights and gaining deeper understanding of how we can love God and live out our faith in practical ways.
So let's dive into this season of Love in Context, where love and the context of the Bible intersect to transform our lives.
Welcome back to the Love in Context podcast. That's going to be our new intro right there.
Me just making noise and I don't even know what that's going to sound like.
So. Oh, that's so great. So great. So we are continuing on in our series of Kings and Kingdoms.
Week 5.
Yep, talking about
did I do this right?
Kings.
Yeah, week 5. I had to count.
It is somewhere between week 1 and 8.
I was going to mention that we had a comment on the YouTube video a few weeks ago when we were saying, raise your hand if you ever heard of Sennacherib, and they're like, I can't raise my hand. I don't know who that is.
So great.
So great.
We're going to be talking about Darius.
Yeah.
Today.
Darius the first.
Which not the second. Not
does
the
imply that there was more than one Darius.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we know about Darius?
He's a king.
He is a king.
He had a kingdom.
Very true.
I know.
Well done, Ben.
I'm being so helpful right now.
Would you like a gold star?
Do you have one?
No, I don't.
No, you don't. So you're literally making promises that you can't fulfill. You hear that, YouTube? You hear that, Spotify? You hear that, other places that we post? He makes promises, and he does not fulfill them.
Only to you. So Darius, also known as Darius the Great, ruled the Persian Empire from about 522 to about 486 BCE.
I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. Anybody who calls themselves the Great tends to have some issues. You think about Alexander the Great. We're going to talk about another one called Herod the Great.
I don't think they had quite the same level of psychological evaluations.
Probably not.
Back then.
Well, even if they did, like we were talking about in our last episode, it's like, who's going to tell the most powerful person in the world that, hey, your brain isn't quite right?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, right.
You think a little too highly of yourself. Really? Do you want to talk to my army about that?
Uh-huh. Oh, I do? Well, I'm just going to cut your head off.
Yeah, right?
For insulting me. Yeah. So Darius, he was mostly known for military conquest.
Yeah. And so we're going to go Persian Empire now. Mm-hmm. Persians coming in and completely knocking out the Babylonians, which, by the way, last week we were talking about Daniel, we were talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Mm-hmm. There's actually a vision of Daniel in the book of Daniel, mm-hmm. where it talks about nation getting knocked out by nation, getting knocked out by nation. Mm-hmm. We're actually kind of going through them right now. Mm-hmm. Right. So, Babylon is just completely knocked out. Assyria is knocked out by Babylon. Babylon's knocked out by Persia. Mm-hmm. And so he is, like you said, he's known for his expansion because they takes over territories. So Babylon was taken over, Egypt was taken over, and parts of India.
Mm-hmm.
India.
To put context in this, that is a huge, massive empire for that day and age.
Yeah. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's massive, which, by the way, is one of the things that led to administrative reforms, the way that he actually started running his government. Mm-hmm. So it was a centralized government. So Darius implemented a system of satrapies. Yeah, that's right. That's a word. It's basically provinces to manage all of this vast Persian empire. So a satrapy is a province or a region governed by a satrap, hence why it's called a satrapy, right? Who acted as the king's representative,
mm-hmm.
right? So somebody's in charge of this area that's the king's representative. And so this allowed them to have more efficient administration and diverse and extensive territories of the Persian Empire because you have each person in charge of a little area who reports up to the big person, mm-hmm. right? And so the satraps were typically appointed by the king, and they'd be members of the royal family, trusted noble, local leaders. But their loyalty was incredibly crucial because they held significant power that the empire has now diffused.
Yeah.
Right? Their administrative responsibilities, collecting taxes, maintaining odor. Odor. they were teenagers. They had to maintain odor. maintaining order and overseeing. Sorry, Spencer works with teenagers, so that's a little too close to home for him.
Oh, that's hilarious.
They had to collect taxes. They had to maintain order and oversee local governance. And so they had the authority to enforce the laws and manage resources. But to the king's specifications.
Yeah.
right? So they can just go, you know, go cowboy on this and just do whatever they wanted, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, but each province was then expected to provide troops for the Persian army and maintain local security. So they not only had to send people off to be part of the Persian Empire, mm-hmm. who was going to continue to expand their territory, but they also had to retain local presence mm-hmm. as well to make sure that they were maintaining security and everybody was staying under the heel of Persia. Mm-hmm. So what this allows is that communication and control is facilitated very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so then you have you're able to have this sprawling empire because you know that if you only have centralized power in one spot, there's only so far you can go before your authority runs out.
Yeah.
So diffusing it over let's just say hundreds of different people mm-hmm. over different areas is going to give you the ability to continue to move your presence further and further mm-hmm. out while still maintaining the same level of authority.
Yeah. One of the things that sets Persia apart from Babylon or Babylonia is that Persia was actually more focused on quantity than quality.
Yeah.
Like, so they were more about, okay, how big of an army can we get? We don't need the best tools, but if we have a big enough army, it doesn't matter if the other army has better tools, we'll still take them out.
Right. Right.
And so Persia wasn't really known for their technological achievements. They did have some, mm-hmm. But they were known for the size of their army. Mm-hmm. So like their army was so flipping big that when people are like, oh, you're going to go up against Persia? Cool. We'll have fun dying tomorrow. Like that was the mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just, it's just overwhelming odds. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, I really want you to understand this idea of regional. Understand this idea of, I don't want to say dictatorships, but that's not what I meant. This idea of regional responsibility, because it's going to be a really big deal when we talk about Asawaras next week, mm-hmm. When we're talking about the next king. So, but this is already in place, and then Asawaras is going to step into that after this. Mm-hmm. If you imagine like a spider can kill an ant. But if there's like 1,000 ants versus a spider, mm-hmm. it's problematic for the spider, mm-hmm. right? And that's kind of like the whole Persian thing. It's not that they weren't bad; they were bad at war, but they just had so many overwhelming numbers that even if somebody was better, mm-hmm. they're still going to lose, mm-hmm. right? Which makes sense if you talk about all these regions, they're having to send off troops on a regular basis and maintain local security. So now you're not having to use your occupying troops or your conquesting troops to secure your land. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Something else that Darius did is he did a lot of legal reform. Mm-hmm. So standardization of the laws all across the area. So you think about all these different tribes, all these different regions, they're all going to have different variations of the laws. He's like, nope, we're going to have one standard law. This is how you're going to do it, right? Everybody is going to follow this thing exactly the same way, mm-hmm. right? Unity of taking the diverse cultures and legal practices of the various areas. Standardization now provides legal proceeding and ensure that similar offenses were treated all throughout the region or all throughout the nation the same way. Mm-hmm. Okay. With that, you have the codification of legal codes, right? So he actually then outlines and gives it to them so they have this. This codification makes it more accessible and understanding to the populace. So it's not just rules that people don't know. Now everybody knows the rules. Mm-hmm. And if you break the rules, you know what the price is for breaking the rules, right? Mm-hmm. In this way, knowledge is helping them maintain power, right? Mm-hmm. And the legal forms included establishment of local courts and judges within each satrapy, right? So allowing the resolution of disputes at local levels. This decentralized judicial system ensured that the legal matters could be handled more efficiently and in accordance with local customs while still adhering to the overall legal framework set by the central government. Because you don't want to be the king of Persia dealing with a guy who stole bread in one of your furthest outreaching, regions, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's a big deal. And a few of these things start to play in together. Like in infrastructure, one of the things that Darius is credited with is building what's called the Royal Road. This is not the Rainbow Road, for those of you that play Mario. Mm-hmm. It's the Royal Road. And what this does is it allows them to trade and facilitate communication over vast distances in a much more time-effective manner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been in mountainous region, but unless you have roads, it can take a while to get word from one place to another.
Yes, yes. We live in Alaska. I do a lot of hunting, and there's some areas that with that. I'm like, oh, it won't be that bad to get up to this area to go hunt. And then as I'm climbing up to that area, I have all sorts of thoughts and words coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
As I'm like, I made a horrible decision. And then I get up there and I'm like, it better be the best animal I have ever seen for me to pull the trigger on this one.
And right? Then you don't find anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So mountainous regions are hard to get across. One of the things Darius did with this road system, though, is he actually established waypoints along there. So he was able to actually communicate his message with across the entire kingdom in a matter of, I think it was like 9 to 11 days, something like that.
Which sounds slow to us, but is so fast by ancient standards.
And so what it was is there were these way stations where they figured out, okay, we can ride a horse from this spot to this spot before the horse is worn out. So we're going to put a way station here. Another horse is going to take off from there. And that's what they did all throughout this road. And so they would pass messages all the way from central India at the time to Egypt in about 9 to 11 days.
Well, and he actually did even more than that because he actually cut a canal that connected the Nile to the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Right? So so he's not only connecting land, but he's also connecting water. Right? And so, like, because boating is becoming a much, much bigger thing at this time. So now if you need supplies for this ever-moving army or regions, or let's just say there's a natural disaster in an area and you're needing to shift food and resources to an area, you're able to actually ship food and resources and everything to these places inside of your kingdom in a much more effective manner, right? Because people tend not to rebel when they're not hungry, right?
Yeah. Takes about the same amount of time it takes Amazon to get us a package in Alaska. Sorry.
It is one of my favorite things. And this is, by the way, Amazon, not a sponsor. But if you order something, whenever I see the commercials and they're like same day, and I was like, not in Alaska.
Nope, not in Alaska.
It's going to take at least. Hey,
it is free shipping and it will show up.
Yeah, it is free shipping and it will show up. But beyond that, it's not going to be quick.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So the other thing is moving in. So he's codifying all these different things. He's establishing these trade routes. He's putting a lot of people in authority that report back to him. The other thing that he's really pushing is cultural and religious tolerance, right? So Darius promoted a policy of a religious and cultural tolerance, allowing the various people from all over his empire to have their own customs and beliefs to help maintain peace and stability. Now, we're going to get into some stories about why, like, even with that, there were some expectations on that. But overall, they were allowed to keep their customs as long as they adhere to some different things. And then in his lifetime, Darius was also a massive supporter of a very popular religion at that point. It's called Zoroastrianism. Sorry.
Nailed it.
Yeah, it's not an easy one to say. I actually wrote it down because I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to remember how to say that. shaping the religious landscape of the empire. So I'm going to call it Zoro. Just anybody who has a problem with me calling it that, just feel free to send me an email, but I'm just going to call it Zoro, okay? Because I don't want to try to say that every time and mess it up. But it's based on the teaching of a prophet by the name of Zoroaster or Zarathustra, depending on who, which translation you look at, who emphasized this duality of good and evil. And this central belief is that there's a god by the name of Ahura Mazda, which is not the car, by the way. That's the supreme god representing truth and light. And then there's Agra Mainanu. It's the spirit of chaos and darkness. And there's this cosmic struggle that's going on, right? And when you do good, like, you feed the god of light, and when you do bad, you feed the god of darkness. And so it emphasizes, like, this ethical living with core principles, good thoughts, good words, good deeds, prayers, offerings, ceremonies centered around fire, which symbolizing purity and the presence of Ahura Mazda. I just can't not hear the car now. And they believe that in the afterlife, their souls are going to be judged based on their deeds, the righteous being rewarded in paradise while the wicked face punishment. Now, I want to pause here because there are a number of people that I've encountered that look at Christianity through this lens.
Yeah.
And hopefully through listening to us, you understand that this is not Christianity. And it's not even close to Christianity. But there are a number of people who believe that they're going to take their good deeds and their bad deeds. You're going to set them on a scale, and whichever one weighs heavier is going to determine your eternal fate.
You know who? There's another nation we've talked about that has a similar practice to that.
Let me think.
Now Ben's being facetious. I think it was, Egypt. Yeah, right? That's like when they're going to the afterlife, they weigh out the good and the bad, and it determines how that goes for you.
And the main reason I want to pause here, just pause there, is because I think there is a tendency in our faith to fall into this trap of like religions that have like, God is telling a different story on purpose. The whole story of redemption is that God is as you live in community with God, that he's going to walk with you. And it's not because of something you did, but because of who he is.
Yeah.
But when you walk with him, he calls you to walk a certain way. And there are a number of people still to this day who have this idea, and inside the Christian church, who have this idea that you do good and God is happy with you, and you do bad and God is mad at you.
Yeah, I also want to just add one caveat on the good and bad a little bit. So we often view that through a westernized modern cultural lens of like what we interpret as good and bad.
Sure. Okay? Yeah, 100%.
And you have to understand what we interpret as good and bad today is different than what Egypt interpreted as good and bad back in their day, which is different than what Persia interpreted as good and bad. So if you're really going to dive into this and want to understand more about this thought process, this religious system that Egypt had, that Persia had, you need to take time to also dive into what they deemed as good and what they deemed as bad.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The main thrust of this is that we understand that we are accepted because of whose image we're made in. And it is actually us having faith in the faithfulness of Jesus Christ and his sacrifice that enables us to walk with God in communion. It opens this door to the kingdom of God for us to walk in.
Yeah.
There is no cosmic battle between God and the devil. God won that a long time ago.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole thing, it's finished. Yeah. The battle's done. War's done. He won it handily. And now the choice for us is, are we going to walk in that freedom, or are we going to choose to live in our old ways? Right?
Yeah.
So that was the little aside. We're going to get back into this.
So one of the things Persia is also known for, and I've talked about a little bit, but is military strategies. Now, they differed from surrounding nations, okay? They were more focused on expansion and defense than they were on, like, siege warfare.
Right?
So they were, like I said, they were a nation of quantity, not quality.
Right?
They actually had... one of the things that can be accounted through history about the Persian army is that they had a variety of weaponry. And that's because as they expanded, they pulled people from local regions, created their own militia that then bled into the expansion force that Persia had. And what Persia did is like, actually, you know how to use those weapons? Keep using those.
Yeah.
Right? And we're just going to create a massive army. You use the weapons you know how to use, and we're going to go take over more nations.
Well, and as you, if you think about that, is like if you go in and a nation just surrenders to you, then you actually end up adding people to your army without having to lose anybody, right? So obviously Babylon is conquered. He solidifies his control over Babylon. And then there's a country, the Scythian. There's a Scythian campaign. He goes and takes over Scythia. It's old, modern-day Ukraine is the area. Expands Persia into the northwest. And he starts to incorporate new territories, getting further into Egypt and placing people in authority there. Going into India, like we talked about again. Once again, particularly he's going to be in the regions of like the Indus River because it's going to help increase the empire's wealth and resources because now you're able to trade and move things at a much more faster pace. Wow, I'm good at English.
You're doing great today.
I'm good at English today.
Yeah.
And then like to your point, you're talking about the standing army, right? The defense. So standing army. So I love this. Darius established a well-organized standing army known as the Immortals, consisting of 10,000 elite soldiers, and this force was crucial for both the defense and expansion, providing a reliable military presence throughout the empire. By the way, if you've seen 300, they kind of played with this a little bit, but that was with Xerxes, but it's the same idea, the Immortals, right?
Yeah.
And then this is a piece with like every time he's advancing, he's also creating so that they're fortifying specific cities, key cities, and making sure, like your point with the waypoints, that there's this royal road. And so these specific places that you can go place to place to place to place, and these cities that are fortified and a process throughout the country,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And
it also provided them with a warning system.
Yeah, yeah,
where absolutely. They could have a quick defense response.
And if each region is supposed to maintain a fighting force as well as sending troops mm-hmm. to the army, what that means is that if you're going through and announcing, then everybody's bringing their fighting troops forward,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Naval power is becoming a thing at this point.
Persia was actually one of the main players in developing that.
Yeah. And so they have this navy not only to protect their trade routes, but also support their military operations. Mm-hmm. And Darius, one of the things about when they would deal with rebellion is because you have these regional people who are in charge of handling the rebellions, if they want to maintain control of their little kingdom,
mm-hmm.
you can't have a rebellion happening in your area. So mm-hmm. their job is to make sure that people don't rebel, and the people who do rebel, you don't hear from again.
Yeah.
Right? That's a fancy way of saying they get killed, but
thanks for the clarification.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I just wanted to make sure that people knew. So this is who Darius is. Mm-hmm. Like, so he's a king of a expanding empire, moving into all the known places of the world. People are, you know, there's people who are being placed in authority underneath him, and they're just like going, right? Mm-hmm. And enter the back half of the book of Daniel. Mm-hmm. There's a couple places in scripture we're going to talk about. In back half of Daniel, there's a story. And then in the book of Ezra, when the Israelites are being released, we're also going to be talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
also, just because it's fun on a podcast, is raise your hand if you realized Ezra and Daniel took place in the same time.
I mean, I did, but
I did
yeah,
too,
but it is a little bit surprising because sometimes we have a hard time putting these on a time.
Yeah.
Timeline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let me go back to the book of Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
So like we were talking about last week, if you have not read the book of Daniel recently, I would recommend reading through the story of Daniel in the lion's den, because this is one that's going to be dealing specifically with yeah. Darius. Also, Ezra 4 through 6, that's going to be a lot of the places where we actually hear from Darius.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read the book of Ezra, I also recommend maybe just doing the Bible Project Ezra on that as well,
yeah.
so that you can kind of get a context for that before our mm-hmm. conversation here.
Yeah.
So when we last left
Daniel,
Nebuchadnezzar had been humbled.
Mm-hmm.
And then after this, there's this whole thing about the hand writing on the wall,
mm-hmm.
right? That that the destruction is coming. So destruction has come to Babylon. Now Persia is in charge of what was previously Babylon. So Darius is now in charge of this area.
Mm-hmm.
So Daniel has given this what was about to happen. It says that very night at the end of chapter 5, verse 30, that very night Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel, okay? Mm-hmm. So Daniel apparently is real popular with people,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he probably watches them and he's like, this guy knows what he's doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Darius has taken over, and then right away, what does he do?
Appoints Daniel.
And 120 regional people
mm-hmm.
with three to oversee them. And mm-hmm. all three of those report back to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So he's real, real invested in this type of government, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to read this story because I think it is an interesting story. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administration and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he sets Daniel up and he's like, "You're one of three." But because Daniel's so good at it, mm-hmm. he's like, "I'm planning on putting you just in charge of like everything,
mm-hmm.
and then you report to me."
Yeah,
like you're going to be number two. So I do want to compliment Darius on recognizing like,
yeah,
he puts good people in authority. And then, so then you have a bunch of people who are like, well, we can't find anything negligent about him. So let's go and attack something that doesn't actually really matter to Darius.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come at this sideways.
Yeah.
Right? Because Darius, once again, religious tolerance, he doesn't really care who you worship.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you give him what he's supposed to have and administer his stuff well,
yeah,
he's like, we're good. Mm-hmm. Right? So then what happens here? Okay. So the administrators, continuing in verse 6, the administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, may Darius live forever. He's 62, so that's probably not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
the royal, let's see.
He's probably older at this point.
Yeah, probably. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue the edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god of, or human being during any human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, should be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. Okay, so quick problem here. They said the royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
No.
No. Because who would have known that if they had agreed?
Daniel.
Daniel, one of the three guys in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
But King Darius writes it in anyways. So now when Daniel learned the decree had been published.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So clearly Daniel didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
He went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den? The king answered, this decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. Then they said to him, to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decrees you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Okay, Darius is very different than Nebuchadnezzar,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he's like, oh, okay, yeah, if you want to. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I don't mind being praised, mm-hmm. but cultural tolerance, religious tolerance has been a thing in his area. But these guys are shiesty.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, didn't you remember that rule that you put out there that like nobody could do this? He's like, oh yeah, I remember that rule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Daniel broke it and he's like,
mm-hmm.
y'all set this up, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But unlike Nebuchadnezzar, who probably would have been like, I'm just going to kill you all. Darius is like, nope, this law has been made, and now we have to try to work within these confines of these rules that have been made to rescue Daniel.
Yeah.
One side note on Daniel here, which we're not going to spend a ton of time on this,
right.
But I think it's worth saying, is that when Daniel learned about this decree that mm-hmm. puts his life in danger, he goes to God and gives thanks just like he's done before.
Yeah.
Like, there's something to be said about when trials, tribulations come our way, just continue to be who you are with God.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a dynamite takeaway from mm-hmm. that. So he does every effort until sundown, but he just can't figure out a way to get him out of it. So continuing in 16, so the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den, which, by the way, like, why do you have a den of lions?
Because you can.
I guess because you can, right? And he threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. By the way, this is, once again, Darius doesn't care that Daniel mm-hmm. serves God because he's fully aware.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, may your God actually save you. So the story goes through, and Daniel is safe at the end. And I want to jump in here in verse 22. Says the king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to
How
all
many
the
many lions were in there.
I know. Well, they didn't eat them. They just crushed their bones.
Uh-huh.
Also, Well, I have one thought here too. It's going to be something I probably won't resolve, but I'll bring up in a second. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and the peoples of every English and every language in all the earth. So he sends a message all across the nation. May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders. In the heavens and on earth, he has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Okay. I did think this is interesting. I just want to point this out here. He says, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den. The issue I have, of course, with that is that they didn't actually falsely accuse him. They just set up the situation to trap Daniel. And I think probably if I went into the Hebrew Aramaic, depending on which portion of Daniel that is. By the way, the book of Daniel is written in both Hebrew and Aramaic. So
it's actually one of the most difficult books to translate.
Yeah. And there might be a reason that some of it's written in Hebrew and some is written in Aramaic. But it's written that way on purpose. But so Darius then writes to everybody. He's like, hey, so the idea here was to kill Daniel because of who he served. But we recognize from this event, his God is a living God, and he's the one who's going to protect Daniel. So all throughout the nation, you need to be aware this God is real, right? That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really big deal. Because once again, we're talking about powerful people in the world.
Well, you're talking about Darius, who doesn't care who you worship.
He doesn't care who you worship, yeah.
Right? He has his religious tolerance about him.
I mean, you could say that he is a proponent of Zoroastrianism, but he doesn't really...
But he doesn't care, like, who, like, as someone underneath him, like, he doesn't care who they worship.
Yeah.
Right? He has his religious beliefs, and he's like, if you have yours, that's fine. Okay. He's saying, he's like, oh, by the way, I have my religious beliefs. I know you have yours. Daniel's God, he's a real thing. Like, he's a real deal.
Yeah.
Right? That's pretty big for someone who has a religious tolerance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's going to be during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus, who comes after him, that the Jews are actually released from captivity and they're sent back to Israel. Once again, this has to do with the way that Persian people like governed. They're like, we want you to go back to your land and run your land and prosper in your land and give us your stuff. They want you to go back and they want you to run your nation and have somebody who's placed an authority over you. And so Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, they end up leading the exile back to back, not the exile, the return back to Israel. And Daniel stays. Daniel doesn't leave. Daniel, I believe, dies in Persia. And I do love this idea that Daniel continues to be the remnant and doesn't go back, but actually continues to bring Yahweh into all the world.
Yeah.
And we're also going to see that in the life of Esther and Mordecai, that they continue to dwell in this foreign nation. And Darius he's not only going to send people back, but he's also going to send stuff back to help them rebuild the temple. And they're going to have issues with the people who are in the land during that time. So when Ezra and Nehemiah and Zerubbabel, and they're all working towards rebuilding the temple, rebuilding the walls, all the different things that happen in Ezra and Nehemiah, people start giving them hard times. So they write a letter back to Darius, write letters back to Cyrus. They write letters back to Cyrus and they come back in their defense, right? They're like, hey, I sent these guys here. They're supposed to be here, you know? One of the things I do like about Darius is he doesn't suffer people who are dumb, right?
Yeah. Darius is a king where he was actually very logical and thoughtful in how he went about stuff. Which, to his credit, he didn't have the most technologically advanced kingdom. They did pioneer like naval warfare and transportation of goods via boats, but they didn't have the siege warfare that the Babylonians had. They didn't have anything that was listed as like a marvel wonder of the world type thing. They were just a basic group of people that were like, we're going to get a lot of us together and we're going to have other people instead of paying tribute, which they paid some tribute, but instead of doing that, we're going to have them make sure they have a fighting force for when we do need to go to war. Mm-hmm. We can be like, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
So they governed very differently.
Well, if you think about Nebuchadnezzar and Babylonian mm-hmm. rule, is that like they're going to rule with an iron fist above you.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Persian rule, by the same metric, is like we're going to take over, but we're going to govern you with an open hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In other words, like it's more of a partnership, but don't be fooled. I run this show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so I don't want to pretend like Persia didn't lay down the law if it needed to happen. Mm-hmm. But they were much more interested in having a bunch of people that were excited to be a part of what they're doing and would add their distinctiveness. You think about the Borg, add your distinctiveness to our own, right? That was a real nerdy joke for Star Trek people out there, right? It's not quite the same because
it's a little different.
It's a lot different than what we're talking about, but I couldn't help. But when I said adding their distinctiveness to their own, I just couldn't help it. It had to be said.
Uh-huh.
So, so it really sets up this, there's just this different mentality that's going to happen mm-hmm. moving forward in the ancient world.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're kind of getting away from this idea of the iron fist, and you're going to see that even when the Greeks come in mm-hmm. and when the Romans come in, yes, they're still going to like take over people. They're still going to take over territories, but it's less about just like, it's not brutal annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just carting tons of people off into captivity.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how do we occupy these places and make these places look like us?
Yes.
Right. How do we make these places look like the country we come from?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, with Rome, they're going to say, you know, all roads lead to Rome because every place that Rome takes over is supposed to look like Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which leads to Rome's downfall, but that's another episode.
Yeah. That's another episode.
So what would be the biggest takeaway when we're talking about King Darius?
I just think that it's going to like, understanding the shift that's happening in history and how it's going to impact the Jewish people, but it also is how it's going to affect the story that's coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think about the time of Jesus, mm-hmm. right? Jesus comes at a time that's not only opportune in the life of the Israelites, and I want to say this in the way that like they are passionately pursuing Torah, they have yeah. rabbinic school, they have people who are debating about the right ways to follow Torah, and whether or not those debates are helpful, everybody's thinking about it.
Yeah.
Right. So like their schooling system is based around like memorization of Torah and following rabbis and teaching and growing in the word of God and experiencing the word of God, even while they're in occupation. But we're moving towards this direction that when Jesus actually does come and he dies and is resurrected and his disciples go and they bring the church, now there's going to be roads that go everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right? So when the gospel goes to spread, and it's not just about Israel anymore, but it's about all nations, mm-hmm. there's actually going to be roads that go everywhere.
Yeah.
Where there's going to be ships that can take Paul mm-hmm. to different places, and he's going to crash most of them. Because
mm-hmm.
that's how Paul does boats. But uh-huh. like, and there's going to be like centralized laws, because that's going to be a new thing. So mm-hmm. you know, going from place to place to place to place, that the nation has like a centralized law. Like that's something that Rome picks up. It's Roman law is the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This starts with Persia. We're starting on this road towards a place where when the gospel spreads, it's able to spread like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
And humanity thinks that they were the ones that came up with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But God is like moving things along to the point where when the time was right, in the fullness of time is how they're going to say it,
mm-hmm.
Christ came.
Yeah.
And because of the time that they came, it was the most inopportune time. I said inopportune. It is the most opportune time for him to come in history as well, because it's able to spread like wildfire across the known world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and not only that, like Jews have been carted off into like Ukrainian areas mm-hmm. and Turkey and like all these different places mm-hmm. because of captivity. And so you still have the Daniels and you have the Esthers who have Jewish heritage in these outlying areas. And they say, hey, the Jewish Messiah finally came.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, I'm a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so like when we're reading about a king like Darius, you seeing how God is working with humanity throughout mm-hmm. is a big deal.
Yeah.
The other piece I think is what does it mean to be a Daniel in a land that isn't following God?
Mm-hmm.
When it costs you everything,
mm-hmm.
when you are in trouble, where do you run for help?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I do think it's important to note that Daniel doesn't go and pray in the town square. Mm-hmm. He still just prays in his house, but he does not close the window because he's praying towards Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Right? And he gets caught, but he's not just going and flaunting it in front of people.
Yeah.
But he also does not betray who he is. He still prays three times a day like he's going to.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to be a follower of Yahweh in a land that's not serving him?
Mm-hmm. You're going to look different.
You're going to look different.
Mm-hmm.
And even if your character is impeachable, impeccable, mm-hmm. that's the word I'm looking for. Impeachable would be something else. Even if your character is impeccable and everything
I'm sticking with impeachable.
Impeachable. And everything
your character's impeachable.
And everything that you do is good.
Mm-hmm.
People will still find ways to come after you.
Yeah.
And what you do in that moment tells a lot about who you follow.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I would say with this, life circumstances does not dictate who you are,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's a lie we've kind of been fed by culture, the enemy, whoever you want to say, or we'll be like, oh, well, they just have some tough situations right now, so that dictates who they are. It's like, no, you are a child of God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are reborn into his image. You are reborn into his likeness. You've been redeemed, saved from your sinful self. If life sucks right now, that doesn't change that.
Correct.
It doesn't change that. If life's great right now, it doesn't change that. When we lean into that that call of who we are, a child of God adopted into his family, he realizes it doesn't matter your life circumstances because you're not serving this kingdom. You're not serving this world. You are serving the God Most High.
One of the things you should note as we're in week 5 of this Kings and Kingdoms is God uses very different types of people.
Mm-hmm.
And these other kings that are not Jewish kings, right? So you have Melchizedek, who's largely a priest king, right? And a follower of God Most High. You have Sennacherib, who is just a brutal mm-hmm. fighter, right? Mm-hmm. And a guy gets a little high on his own supply,
mm-hmm.
right? You have Necho II, who wants to reclaim the glory of Egypt, mm-hmm. right? You have Nebuchadnezzar, who is the single most powerful person in the world and is determined for you to know it,
mm-hmm.
but is also a servant of God.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you have Darius, who's largely an administrator,
mm-hmm.
right? A person who's setting up an elaborate system in order to consolidate power, but also to maintain power throughout a nation.
Yeah.
When we talk about Ahasuerus, he's different, even though he's still Persian, mm-hmm. right? Herod the Great is going to be different. Caesar Augustus is going to be different. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of all of these situations, I think maybe this takes on a little bit of a different flavor, especially with us just recently having election season.
Mm-hmm.
Who is in charge doesn't matter so much as that God is on his throne.
Mm-hmm. Which, spoiler alert, God is on his throne.
And so we're like, oh, well, if so-and-so gets elected, the world is going to fall apart. And I was like, listen, I've seen Sennacherib, I've seen Necho, I've seen Nebuchadnezzar, I've seen Darius, we're going to see Ahasuerus, we're going to see Herod the Great, we're going to see Caesar Augustus.
We could list 100 other ones.
Yeah.
Too.
And in all of those, God's will is accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
God's kingdom moves forward.
Yeah.
Kings and kingdoms, like God works in the middle of them to accomplish his purposes,
mm-hmm.
and he is always after everybody, even the terrible people that we don't like.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
And that is a theme that you should be catching through this miniseries.
Yes.
Is that God works for all types of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, join us next week as we talk about I'm going to butcher this. Ahasuerus.
Yeah. You're going to have to practice that before next week.
Ahasuerus.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're having a kid, just saying, Ahasuerus.
Yeah. Also, avoid those Mazdas. Not a sponsor.
Yeah, not a sponsor.
All right.
Join us next week.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope you enjoyed this engaging conversation and gained valuable insights into the powerful message of love within the Bible.
We'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. Connect with us by sending us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. We greatly appreciate your feedback and ideas for future episodes.
Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Don't forget to hit that follow button to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join our growing community.
Thank you for being part of the Love in Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in the context of today's world.